Welcome to Automates, the podcast that brings you musings from thought leaders and industry pioneers who are shaping the way we work, think, and succeed. Each episode is packed with insights, expert interviews, and practical tips that will inspire and empower you to take your business to the next level. So tune in, subscribe, and get ready to innovate with Automates. Alex Smith. Hello, sir. How are you on this fine Monday morning?
I'm good. Nice and early on a Monday.
I know. It's quite a pleasure, actually. Normally, my meetings are all sort of team stand-ups and stuff like that. But to see your smiling face on a Monday morning, it's quite a good start to the week.
Yeah, can't be a bad week this week, right?
Yeah, well, I hope not. And we've had plenty of tough weeks. But it's the end of school holidays for me. So this week is no kids in the house. It's almost going to be lovely, except I have to work. But it's fine.
I'll try and empathise with you.
Yeah, exactly. So, Alex, I've known you for I don't know how long, but far too long. But just in case anyone doesn't know who you are, why don't you just tell us a little bit about yourself, where you are and what you're up to at the moment, and then we can dive in.
Cheers, Ben. My name's Alex Smith. I am the global product lead here at iManage. I cover search, knowledge, and AI. I've been here now 5.5 years. I'm sure we'll talk a bit about that journey as we go into this podcast. Before that, I was an innovation manager at Reed Smith, kind of probably in the last wave of legal innovation and AI. We call it now the 2016 to 2018 wave or something like that. And then before that, I was a very long time at LexisNexis, where I got to know you, Ben. Kind of, I can't remember, a little bit of events, followed by pubs, followed by there was some work somewhere in the middle of that, I think. I can't quite remember when you were at HiQ. So I think it's probably about 2008, 9, 10, something like that. We've known each other since.
Yeah, definitely. Cool. So, I mean, I think when we were talking about setting this up and I sent over an agenda, I had given up on like 18 months of your iManage career because I thought it'd be like 4 years. So, I mean, it's 5.5 years is a good old stint. I think I also forget that I've been where I am for like 2.5 years now. And it's like, how did that happen? I mean, where did the time go? But so you, according to LinkedIn, you're the global search and AI product lead, but you described it as something slightly different. So is there a difference or is it the same? Because when I sort of read global search, I just sort of think of Indiana Jones, just going looking for stuff. That's what I read. That's what I see.
How would I describe it, Ben? So I definitely, the three areas I cover, and they do all overlap, and sometimes they overlap, sometimes they don't totally overlap, which is where the wonders of product management comes in.
Yeah.
But I cover search here at iManage, so that's everything from search within the DMS itself, document management system, through to other types of search where search is used throughout the platform. That goes into, I guess, into my knowledge management area, where we are creating a knowledge platform where people can share, collaborate, pull together know-how, look after that know-how, bring together what we call analytical search under a kind of a knowledge piece. I'm sure we'll talk a bit more about knowledge management and it's important still. And then kind of, you know, I've kind of looked after AI now for 5 and a bit years from joining iManage probably about a year and a bit after the Raven acquisition, all the way through to, you know, 2023 and the Great Awakening, or whatever you want to call Gen AI. I don't know, responding to that last year, and I hope developing things to market this year. Kind of those things, they all overlap somewhere. Sometimes they don't overlap. You know, there's different use cases for some of the AI stuff doesn't quite fit within what you'd probably call institutional knowledge, which doesn't fit in like, you know, kind of like the DMS itself, but the lot we can talk about, but it covers all of those areas. The search piece isn't quite going out hunting for lost relics. Although some of the concepts sometimes do feel like lost relics and things that haven't.
I was thinking though, that's what.
You know, like, things that.
I'm trying to work out what's good, what isn't good, what works, what isn't work. Is it the right artifact? Is it not? How do you justify it? How do you quantify it? What does that look like? I mean, yeah, it's, I mean, search in a grand scheme, search across your traditional search across DMS was just literally, can I find something? But actually these days, and from my, I saw a recent podcast and product announcement, your new knowledge platform is really transforming that, which is sort of the combination of the old school curation plus the front end plus all the capabilities that you can bring with the technology that's brought across the top. And it looks really interesting, really. But I can imagine it's so one of the things I sort of took a step back and I manage have got thousands of customers. How do you, at its core, you've got, I would imagine, as a product lead and somebody who's arguably one of the more sort of fanatical KM advocates in the legal tech space, it must be really hard to sort of stand behind what you're doing and how you're doing it with a sprinkling of customer sort of feedback and advocacy and built into that. But how do you rein all of the good ideas into something that's actually, okay, how do we deliver phase one? What does phase two look like? How do we iterate? What does that look like? What's that journey been on for that new product?
The journey's kind of been, you kind of mentioned the timeline. The timeline's actually quite appropriate in some ways. I joined 2019, just before the pandemic. Mm. We were at an interesting point where, as you know, a lot of firms are still on premises. And so there was, you know, I learned my tiny bit of, you know, kind of on-premises software, which I'd never done before.
Yeah.
You know, and so that's interesting in terms of releases and how people pick up and upgrade and all that kind of thing. But obviously the pandemic has really driven a change to, you know, everyone heading to cloud and a lot quicker than probably predicted when I joined in 2019. So, you know, we decided to build cloud up at cloud first, you know, so that gave us a kind of clean sweep to start to build this product up, you know, and yes, there are an incredible amount of learnings and a lot that we take from the customers we have on premise doing kind of what we call insight on premise. You know, we got the chance to build that from scratch, but you are right. You know, you have to make your choices of where to start, what's phase one, what's phase two, what's phase three, especially when you have that, you know, quite broad portfolio where, you know, the knowledge product, let's just take Insight Plus. We made a choice to start with curated knowledge because it was a smallish data set, but highly valuable for many of those firms. But as you say, Ben, those firms are primarily, you know, the firms that have put that in place before in the past and have put resources behind it, which is in itself a business case, etc. What we've developed out is then start to think, well, okay, do we go broader and go more into, you know, what's in all of the content within the DMS, which is also knowledge, especially when you go to some of our North American customers who have entirely different knowledge traditions / strategies that go on over there. And then we also look at kind of other market trends. So the one for us is we try to bring in these kind of analytical searches, which is being able to search for precedent in the past matters based on the concept of a matter or a person, but integrated with a lot more context coming from business systems, you know, whether that's workflow systems, whether that's, you know, an M&A tracker, whether that's, you know, many of the kind of time billing information tools. But, you know, there's a market trend there in on-prem, for example, you know, you integrate with everything, you know, remember the whole, how many connectors do you have that connect to every last system to pull out one data point from that system. But what's interesting is, you know, it's not just us that have been going through change. It's, you know, other parts of the legal ecosystem. So the big one that we're seeing is, you know, a move from talking about data warehouses and data lakes to actually doing them. So now we're basically able to create an integration point with one place, and that one place is the data warehouse, wherever that may be and in whatever form. So that simplified it out and made it, you know, made us go down a different route. So you're right. It's been about timing. It's also been about getting something to market also.
Yeah. And I was going to comment on that really, because I think the challenge and I came from HiQ, we were cloud, we were sort of releasing quarterly or whatever it was. But in the last sort of, I don't know, sort of, well, in your IMAG, during the course of your iManage journey, there's probably working in a large organization needing to deliver product and wanting to get that out there in front of your customers and sort of get some sort of focus on that. There are hundreds of new sort of startups coming on, releasing regularly, pushing the boundaries, doing all of these different things. I think from a traditional sort of big tech in legal tech world, which is what I consider you guys to be, Thompson's, Lexis and Intapp and the like, sort of getting that competing with, and it's not noise, but competing with the new startups, the new people coming in, doing some of the stuff that you were just talking about, but doing other things too, that creates an extra layer of pressure in order to get something out there. And I think that's always a challenge, particularly when you've got, I think, I don't know, maybe it's a misconception, but sort of everyone hears iManage, everyone hears document management. They don't hear the component parts that go around it. Has that been a challenge to sort of change that narrative? And sort of, I mean, I see you sort of banging the drum of KM and innovation and even pre sort of Reed Smith, the way that you think about things, coming into a larger organization that is known to do document management systems. How have you tried to build that kind of change internally and client facing? What's the dynamic been like?
I think there's a few different dynamics in there. Number one is, you know, if you get this right at the kind of iManage level, you have access, as you said, to all of those customers. Now, not all of them want the products at a certain point in time, and you have to adapt to different markets. But, you know, for example, you know, knowledge management and know-how, for example, you would go, that's a large law thing. But actually, you start talking to corporate, you know, a lot of legal ops is creating know-how, playbooks, templates, running processes, it's know-how, right? So there's that scale and access to scale question. I think the other thing is there's a lot of things as a product manager, what I do that I don't have to worry about so much, because we know how to store documents, we know how to secure documents, we know how to put them in a cloud. You know, all those things come, I'm not going to say free, but they come as part of the tech stack you're working in. I guess your question is, you know, you start to build these things on top of that platform. How do you get to being quick? You know, and at some points, you know, you don't do quick. You build your foundations correctly, because once you've built those foundations, you can go quicker because you don't have to worry about those foundations. A lot of, you know, I think if I ever work for a startup, my main issue would be, you know, I'm always someone who wants to build the foundation well and then build on top of that. But I guess that isn't always the way you do it. And we see, you know, I see from the outside a lot of refactoring going on all the time in the startup world, which is fine. That's a skeptical level, but I'm not that person. So I don't know how I'd ever survive there. But I think the other thing is, you know, once you get past that and you get, you know, your first, I'm not going to say iteration, but your first thing built securely on the platform that you want, is you can get to that level of speed. So this year, you know, in the area of that we released that is generally available, I probably for the first time in my career, I'm not talking about agile, I'm probably doing agile. So we are releasing things incredibly quickly. We're releasing things in phases. We're releasing things now, not in big releases. We release them as and when they're ready, because we put that ability to push things behind feature flags, etc. We built that out. Now there's other parts of my portfolio that aren't working like that, but that's the point of being a director, you know, across all various different products at different stages, is you make the right choices at the right level. So, you know, so you can get to that level. I think the other part of your question was, how do you respond to all of this stuff? And sometimes you just don't. You literally look at it and go, I don't need to. I don't need to. I've got, here's the mission. This is the mission. I'm talking to my customers. I'm talking to my potential customers. I'm talking to market. That's the mission. If I do that mission well, it will be fine. And, you know, it's interesting how sometimes the market swings back in your favor, right? You know, a lot of the AI stuff has swung back around on this grounding idea. And so suddenly we've gone from why would anyone do knowledge management to where is my best content that I can trust that I can put underneath these things. And that wasn't my USB, because I will stand by knowledge and know-how. You know, for know-how, for example, I will stand by that because that makes things more efficient. You can drive more predictability. You can train people better, et cetera, et cetera. I say the business case is still there for that. But having a night, the market accidentally swinging in your favor and going, and now everyone wants to know where their precedence templates, things they can trust to put behind the next chatbot, literally is kind of a market swing in your favor. So sometimes it punches you in the face and sometimes it shakes your hand.
Yeah, 100%. I think we didn't react to the Gen AI stuff on purpose, because not because we thought that it would come back in our favor from a workflow and process perspective. It's, again, that's just another facet of knowledge management. But really, with a view of, we're a small company, we can't just pivot. If we pivot, then we're leaving everyone else behind. And it sort of, it was one of those, it was a really conscious decision, coupled with the fact that we suspected that actually, if we can create the connections to the right environments and be model agnostic and build the capabilities, people aren't going to need a chatbot. They're just going to want to bake it into a process and not even know that it's happening. And that might not be tomorrow, but in 6, 9, 12, 18, 24 months, we know that the direction of the travel is a good one, if that makes sense. It's a good bet. You mentioned something then, which was, and I was curious about sort of your team size. So you're a director, you've got sort of multiple products that you're sort of responsible for. What's your team size? What are you focused in on at the moment? How many layers deep does it go? I'm always curious about the people that have got sort of responsibility to be sort of market facing, but also to actually build shit and do stuff. And sort of what does that look like? Because there's a lot of organizations that perhaps larger organizations that sort of have got the market facing, but they don't then have any responsibility for product. They can just throw bricks over the wall and see what lands, type thing. So from what, talk to me about your team, talk to me how it's constructed and sort of what that looks like.
So we, again, the journey is a bit interesting. We started, when I started 2019, we were trying to keep like what was, you know, the Raven acquisition almost as a separate business unit, you know, keep doing what you're doing, et cetera, et cetera. And that isn't what we are now. So we kind of went back to more globalized, you know, right functions within iManage. So I'm in the product management team. Overall, that's about 30 people in the product management team, but they cover everything from, you know, productivity, which is the DMS, security and conflicts, and other people who are doing things like closing folders, for example. But within my product team, I have three product managers. Those product managers cover the search side. And that, again, that's a bit neutral because that's search across different places where search is used. We cover the Insight Plus side, and we cover kind of our AI. So iManage AI, Ask iManage, which we can talk about a bit later. But then my other part of my team is around the IA side, so around data and data management. So I have about, I think it's about 8 people there. And what they cover is they were originally started to train models in kind of our extract days and build out the various models, build the training sets. Those training sets are still important. We still run various parts of our AI stack on trained data and trained models, not just, you know, prompting. But they've evolved into supporting the Gen AI stuff and et cetera. They've gone into information architecture, like building out best practice for, you know, when you want to use a geography taxonomy, where is that from? What's the ISO standard that comes from? Or is there a standard for it? So I have that team as well. They're also doing quite a bit around workflow because we have a curation tool that's built into Insight Plus. So a lot of people learning things like Power Automate and the flows that go behind Power Automate and workflow engine side, which is great. We then work with and have kind of dedicated resources across engineering. So I have an engineering team that does this, and we also work with our data science team. So we have an R&D data science unit who obviously can help across anything that needs data science. They've obviously been very focused on the AI and Gen AI side. So, you know, probably touching around about, I don't manage them. I manage about 11 people, but touching about 50 people probably in terms of getting the products built.
No, I mean, it's really different organizations have things set up in different ways. We had 11 at its heyday, and I don't know what it looks like now, but sort of 4 years ago, we had sort of 8 product managers, UX people, all that sort of stuff, which was separate from engineering. Engineering was managed, as you'll know, from Ahmedabad. But it's like different people have different ways of doing stuff. Like, generally speaking, they're all the same. But I think the way that I see product teams working the best is that combination of market-facing client sort of consultants that are influencing product rather than product building for an assumed need, if that makes sense. So
I manage is very, sometimes a little bit too much, but it's very product in front of customers. It's very much there is a very, you know, it's one of the reasons I love this place is that, you know, having worked somewhere where sometimes you fought to even go to a conference as a product manager to meet some customers, or you sat behind a sales organization who are very guarded about, you know, kind of who got to see who and their relationships. This place is, you know, seriously, it's like, you know, 2-3 customers every single day on a Zoom call.
Yeah.
As you know, you just come back from ILTACON. ILTACON is 25 meetings for me in front of, you know, the customers one-on-one, or usually one and many in the room. It's a very different exposure here than other places I worked.
No, it makes sense. how much did your time at Reed Smith influence how you approached your job at iManage versus your product roles at Lexis? Your time at Reed Smith, sort of as you sort of said in the very beginning, and I can't remember how you described it. I tried to remember as you said it, but sort of like the first phase of the whole sort of innovation world, 2016, 2018 type time. It's you guys, I remember having a conversation with you in a pub, and everyone was talking about innovation, but not doing innovation. And you were sort of saying, look, it's innovation theater. There's a whole bunch around it. You guys seem to be doing it right. How did you do it right at Reed Smith, if that makes sense? If right was right, you know what I mean? I know we saw perceptions, but sort of, and then how did that influence what you did or potentially did differently between your time at Lexis and iManage? That's a big question, but, you know.
The kind of short answer to, I'll come on to the longer answer, the short answer to kind of the Lexis to Reed Smith and kind of why it was very, very appealing to me was, you know, I'd done probably about 6 years, 7 years of product at Lexis. Two of those years had been in what we call at the time customer discovery, which I kind of look back on, but incredibly fondly now, where we were allowed to go and talk to hundreds of customers, interview them without trying to find an answer, without trying to find what color is the button, etc. It was more on what do you actually do as a lawyer, and then realizing that three lawyers who sat next to each other did the same job entirely differently. Based on personal preference, you know, ability to use tech, ability to even care, whatever. So I kind of looked on the Reed Smith bit, and the reason why it was really exciting to go and do was that it was kind of like, you know, ultimate immersion in that whole law firm environment. And I look back fondly on that kind of ultimate immersion, because obviously the one thing you, as a vendor, you don't get is an idea of politics and is the idea of the people, the idea of how and all they can describe how their organization is structured, but if you actually work there, you see it and live it every day about how people are organized, structured, how they do work, etc. I guess when we went there, you know, I got hired. One of the reasons I got hired was that I had a bit of a product mentality. And so, you know, I wasn't unique there, but there were people there that were looking at things like, how do we work out what the right problem to solve is? How do we work out, is this something that the customer genuinely cares about? And landing at a firm, you know, it takes a bit of time to get trust and trust to be doing this, but there was trust to be in front of the customer.
Yeah.
And by customer, client, whatever you want, you know, however you want to call it, but ultimately it's customer. So, you know, instead of sitting there kind of writing press releases and going on about, you know, the next piece of AI that was coming out at the time, which obviously was Raven and Kira and all those kind of things, we actually spent a lot of time first getting the trust of the partnership and the partners, etc., and then just getting time in front of customers where we could, and then running worthwhile things that allowed us to find things out. So we did, you know, design thinking, etc., etc. I guess the other side of it always was, how do you tie yourself to a result or an outcome? You know, and ultimately, you know, some of the, you could go for a very exciting innovation, but if all the client is asking for is, I want a summary on this contract, which I can then send to the sales team because I'm front facing with the sales team, that's what makes the customer happy. They don't need it to be using X, Y, or Z. And then you get into, you know, the more interesting things in some ways, which I think is going to come to pass again, is you get into the bottom line areas. So you end up working with client value, you end up working with people who can do automation, your practice innovation team, your whatever teams, to actually hit the bottom line, find problems where people care because money is involved, client relationships are involved, we want to win more work by doing lots of low value work first, all of that kind of pieces that come into that. And then you get into the hard yards of the business. And that's where, personally, had I stayed at Reed Smith, I wouldn't be in an innovation role anymore. I'd be in a hard yard business line somewhere based on what we were doing at that point in time. And, you know, the same, we'll probably touch on a bit later, but this whole revolution right now has to end up there. If it's not there right now, I don't think it's there right now at all. At some point, it needs to be hard yards and it needs to be processed and it needs to be, if this stuff is going to be game changing, then you have to go out and reprocess everything and change that game. And that's not going to happen because organically people start doing stuff.
I mean, what was it? 26 and a half minutes and you first mention of hard yards. I like it. I like it. I've got a little bingo card here. I hard yards. I almost said something else then, but I won't. That's the thing. At the moment, it does feel that we're in that, and this is, I always knock it, and I don't mean to knock it. We're in the 2016, 2017 press release stage. We're not in the it's actually making an actual noticeable difference. I mean, I think as you described it, this transformative change, I think I often think of it as part of the transformative change. It is going to influence how people do work. It already has influenced how people do work in certain areas for certain use cases, for certain things. But actually, at the moment, we're encouraging sort of single point interactions. I need to get a summary of this contract. Okay, I'm going to go to a chat interface, or I'm going to go and do this. Whereas actually, at a certain point in a process, the process should know that you're going to need a summary for that contract. So it should just happen and give it to you. You don't need to spend 5 minutes crafting the perfect prompt and going, the process is still the process.
Where is the process? It's almost like, show me the process.
Exactly. You know,
and I'd lay odds that the process is in a Word document in the matter file with a table saying, here is the checklist of the things we need to do.
Yeah.
That was taken from a previous one, which was, you know, or previous two or three, and put together as the plan for this project. Now, there's different parts of law, right? You know, there's areas which are, you know, high volume that have been doing this for 20 years, right?
Yeah.
But that process isn't really that digital in reality.
It's not systemized.
And then the other side that came out when, you know, from Reed Smith, and which always sticks with me, is if this stuff is big, then you have to reprocess everything. If it's just a subtle nudge on top of an existing process, then maybe you don't need to overly do much change, etc., and you can still rely on the Word table or maybe move to a checklist format or something like that, or go into a, you know, a case management system. But ultimately, you know, the thing that stuck with me was the way that processes are now are based on limitations, So you'll have like a two-phase process where you do A first, and A is because you haven't got time to go and review everything in front of you. So you do a quick red flag review or something. And then as a secondary stage, you then go in and do your big due diligence based on what the customer wants. Now, if this is game changing, can automatically give you all the information by a press of a button, then you have to reprocess. You're not going to stick to a two-phase process because of that. But that involves you then pulling in people who are capable of reprocessing. Now, humans to some degree are capable of organically reprocessing some stuff, but that's not, we're talking institutions here that need to bring in professionals to then make that stick. And then the other side, you know, again, hard lesson, both, you know, in the past, but also, you know, kind of 2019, 2020 here, is you can have the world's most successful first project, but if no one follows it and drops back to exactly what they did before, then what was the point, you know, aside of, you know, having a nice press release? But ultimately, that's not change. Change is making that stuff stick and then showing those outcomes again and again and again.
Yeah, and I think it's sort of, we live the hard yards. Our product, Autologix, is the hard yards of process engineering and looking at how we can do things and what the difference between today and the future might look like, and what do we go after? What do our clients go after? How do we consult around it? And sort of making the tech sort of easy to create the process or interpret the process or digitize the process or parts of a process is one of the things that sort of we always sort of work with our customers. The ambition is always there, but actually the hard yards of, okay, well, which parts are the humans? Where's the human in the loop? Is it not the AI human in the loop, but actually the physical humans that need to sign stuff off? Because the transition of adoption of a fully orchestrated process in a digital system, no law firm's going to go, yeah, I want some of that without any overview or oversight whatsoever. No, there's got to be sort of gates and jumps and quite approval processes. And yeah, we're here. Yes, we are here. Check a box type thing. That's time. That's hard. But it comes down to that. As you said, it's that I talk to a lot of people about, okay, well, what kind of resources do I need to have in my team that can run with Autologix? And I said, well, okay, well, what are you big? Are they big processes? Are you integrating with lots of different systems? Are you doing this? Are you doing that? What are you trying to achieve? And they said, well, we've got somebody who writes all of our processes into a Visio diagram, and then they sit there in a bank and they just sit there. And I'm going, okay, well, it's good that you've got those, but I mean, when was the last, how are they reviewed? Are they different? As you said just now, you've got three lawyers in the same team, all working in different ways, because they've gone through that whole sort of process of, as they were going through the ranks in their team, they were working for a particular partner who did things in a particular way. It seemed right, so they've always done that. So I think there's that whole kind of sort of ingrained mentality, ingrained sort of thing. And it comes on to something I was going to talk to you about, which is this, and it's a bit of a leap in terms of sort of connections, but you know, that's what I do. But the idea that I work in the way that I work today because of influences I've had throughout my career, from mentors, unofficial, official, or whatever. And I think there's a lot to be said for sort of how you unpack, well, how people unpack what they do and how they do it. And that cultural change of, I've always done it this way, so that's fine. And Bob told me how I should do it in 1982, so I should always do that. How do you see, it's a weird one. Sort of, I sort of sit back, and in every job I've had, and I won't say I've looked up to somebody, but there's always been somebody who's sort of crafted my time at an organization or in a particular role. I don't even know what my question is, but how do you craft that? How do you unpick some of the things that you might see that are bad practices? And maybe for you, the role of either being a mentor, because I know you've done Law Without Walls and I know you've done all that sort of stuff, the role of being a mentor or being a mentee, how fundamental has that been to your career and what you've done and why you are who you are, what you are today?
It's an interesting question. You sent this over last night and I was trying to work my way through what I was thinking about this one. I think I'd probably start with role models. Yep. Now, those role models can be your boss, they can be someone else in an organization, and it is, you know, probably worthwhile working in large organizations for at least a little while because there is a diversity there of people in those. I appreciate, you know, a startup might be fun, but there isn't necessarily that diversity of people to go and find and look up to, etc. So I do often say go and work for a large organization at least for a couple of years so you can get that diversity. I've had someone who was almost kind of like a mentor at the time, felt like quasi boss, and then eventually we made it formal at Lexis, and she was brilliant. Karen Waldron, she is fantastic. Always had that kind of idea about, you know, customer first, listening to the customer. You can have, you know, your own lots and lots of internal arguments about everyone's opinions, but, you know, go and talk to the customer, test things against the customer. You know, probably even before, you know, way before kind of we got it, this became user-centric design. But then when that became, you know, she was very much behind that. So having someone having your back and, you know, making some mistakes and saying the wrong things and covering you, that's always useful. So if you're in that kind of boss position or you know, senior manager position, that is some degree is your role, as well as, you know, formal teaching and chasing and objectives, et cetera, et cetera. So, you know, I think there's that. But then sometimes that you know, that relationship, it can be difficult for some people. So working out who you need to have on your side elsewhere is important. And I guess to some degree, that's where mentoring comes in. I wasn't going to quite go to mentoring initially. I'd go to probably network.
Yeah.
Network becomes incredibly important because I think, to your point, you know, if you go in and say, I want to be a, you know, design thinking innovation manager at law firm, that's great, right? You can all read the books, you can go out and do this stuff, but doing it in kind of like, you know, the heat of battle, so to speak, where a partner doesn't understand why you'd want to speak to his clients, you're a liability speaking to his clients, et cetera, et cetera. How do you turn that around? So being able to bounce something off people before that, being able to have the informal conversation, being able to say, how would I approach this? I'm not a partner, but so go and talk to a partner, you know, a friend of the family, someone, a mentor, formal mentor, etc., about how they would deal with that. Because you're not going to have the personal experience of being in a partnership and being a partner, right? Unless you went down that route for 15 years and then you go, what
about it? Build some software and change.
Yeah, build some software and et cetera, et cetera. So having kind of that informal ability to go, I'm thinking of doing this and can I do that? Now you can do that through a formal mentorship program. You can do that just by a random coincident meeting and then you just stay in touch with someone and then it turn out that you're both good human beings, quite like each other and quite like to meet up for a coffee or a beer or whatever after work occasionally. That can be how it goes. So I think having that access to network is important, and I wouldn't always say that it's going through mentorship is a good approach to that. Sometimes it's about the right person at the right time. Yeah. So having someone experienced at the right time when you either, for me, it was always less about like promoting. Like sometimes I mentor people and it's a little bit like, how do I do this? And tell me the exact steps of how to get to here. And I want to get to here and here's my plan. And I'm like, that was never me. I was more interested on how can I do my job better by speaking to someone who will then teach me how to speak to customers better, speak to, you know, what's this trend in the market? Does it really matter? I'm not at a law firm. Can you tell me whether this really resonates or not? No, it doesn't. Okay, great. I can pass that one over quite quickly. So there is a degree of network. I think it's also about right time, right person. I don't think probably you should ever have a mentor, the same mentor your entire life. That should turn into friendship after a couple of years. Yeah. And then you can just chat.
Unless and they're more like a psychiatrist.
But I think it is around, you know, if you've got, you often have a problem in your job at some point in time, either I'm new to this and never done this, or I've gone from vendor side to a law firm or vice versa. You kind of want someone, your boss is going to do a great job, right? They'll do what they need to do, but often it's driven by, you know, their perception of what needs to happen and their perception of what their pressures they're under. I think having someone who understands that, or let's say you're at a point of, you know, you've been somewhere for 4 years and you're just going, this is going nowhere. It's always useful to have someone who can talk you through what to do, who to have chat to, what to, you know, what something you might hate doing. You might hate socializing, but occasionally it does actually help you. So someone who can talk you through how to actually have that piece at the right time. So it's kind of like finding those people. And there's formal mentorship programs, which are great, and take advantage of those. There's what I kind of call guerrilla mentoring, which is basically just find the person, approach them. Most people who are a decent person will probably go, yeah, that's absolutely fine. We can have a chat for, you know, once a month for the next 3 or 4 months through this. So don't, you know, you just got to be a bit bold at times about it. And then obviously there's just, you know, your network, hopefully the people stay in touch with you or are connected to you because you're not an idiot and you're not someone who they don't like. So occasionally it's okay to reach out to someone and say, can I have a chat about this? You know, you always seem the person that's in that, or is, your career's gone this way, so help me. So I kind of see it on many different levels, you know, from the very, very formal to, you know, use your network. And why, to me, network's absolutely vital.
Yeah, I'd echo that. When I was thinking about the whole mentoring thing, I was thinking, I called it mentoring because traditionally that's what it's called. But ultimately, if I look at how I go through this process, if I look at my top 10 conversations in WhatsApp, they're people that I've either worked with or they're people that I've worked for. And I'm just shooting the breeze. Oh, what happens in this scenario? What do you think about this? Or did you see that press release? What do you think about that? Is this just a fad? Or, you know, most of it is that whole network thing. And it isn't that formal sort of mentoring, I guess, in that scenario. But it is that you build up a sort of, I don't know if I've been in industry as long as you or haven't, but it's sort of, it's coming on for a good chunk of time, like 20 odd years. Yeah. And you sit there and you... there's people in product who I message, like Tom. I speak to Tom, message Tom every now and again, Andy Neal. But if I've got something around sales or something like that, there'll be people that I've worked with that I thought aren't traditional sales people, and they're good eggs. And you sort of chat to them. Not all salespeople are terrible. I'm sorry, I didn't mean that. You know, but so you build up that network. I think that's a really good point. Network is king, I think, in terms of that this little world that we live in. Because I think we're in a small little industry, which sounds terrible because it is quite big. Mm. But ultimately, from a legal tech perspective, it's sort of not everyone doesn't know everyone, but everyone sort of knows. Is that whole Kevin Bacon 6 degrees of separation? Yeah. You can go back to it. So I think that's always a, and I think
the other one, Ben, is just like, you know, there's a level of paying stuff back, right? You know, I'm almost 50 and I've done this 25 years now. There's a level of paying this back. So if someone very young gets in touch with me, or someone who's, you know, a lawyer wanting to go look at tech or go in, you know, change career or something like that, you know, there's a level for, I guess, I'm not the grandees yet. There are people still older than me who do this and have a lot more experience, but you know, there's a level of paying some of this back in terms of that advice and in terms of a little bit of a help here and there, or, you know, listening to someone or saying, look, it's not all roses if you do X, Y, and Z, but, you know, it might pay back in a slightly different path. There was a really good automated thing about career paths, about, you know, sometimes you have to take sideways jumps, sometimes you have to take large salary downscale jumps, but eventually, you know, the world pays itself back if you're good and if you do things well. So, you know, I think for probably us, I'm not going to say whether you're 50 or not, but for us, there's an element of paying some of it back to some degree, and, you know, kind of picking up the phone or responding to that DM
I've got this big kind of, for the much of my career, I've had this imposter syndrome, 100%, because I'm not formally qualified or trained in pretty much anything. Literally nothing.
And I've got a history degree.
but I think the way that I've approached everything that I've done is I've tried to not be a dick, and I've tried to just get on with stuff. Now, you know, you're not going to like everyone, and people aren't always going to like you. But I find it really rewarding that And it doesn't happen probably as much as it happens to you. But every now and again, I do get a DM and says, Ben, I've got this thing. Or Ben, what would you do here? And I go, shit, somebody's asking me for an opinion. Whoa, this isn't quite right. But it's sort of that is sort of reward. So of course, it's about giving back, but it's sort of even every day it happens, or not every day, but when it happens, I'm sat there going, whoa, why are you asking me? What do I do? What? And so, but then I just sort of, I make something up and everything sounds about right. But I think
it's experience, right?
Yeah, you can't write it on the back of a fag packet, although you can. And I think that's the thing. I think the whole networking thing, mentoring thing, I think it's really important for people coming into the industry, understanding everything else. There's so much pressure on everyone to have a successful startup and scale, and burnout's real and everything else. I think sort of taking a step back. And I think there's that, there is, I think you look at like the communities that exist out there, and it's a lot better than it. I mean, post COVID, sort of the art of connect. Everyone used to just wait for the conferences before you'd connect, and there'd be sort of pockets of stuff. But now, sort of the whole remote thing has just made the ability or the ease of which you'd sort of throw a connection across, or you'd ask a question instead of just waiting until that next conference or the next thing. Pick up.
I think the other thing, Ben, is that, you know, there's people like you, like me, like, you know, many of our peers, if you want to call them peers, who just want change to happen. Like, we wanted change to happen for a very long time, right? We'd love to see a law firm turn around and say, we've done this and we've done it at an institutional level and it's changing the game. You know, we all love talking to people like Alex Hamilton, who genuinely are taking a genuine approach and have spent 14, 15 years trying to make that approach work and go down a different route.
Yeah, definitely.
You know, we genuinely want that to happen. And I remember having this conversation with Alex over a few bottles of wine, and we were like going, if this takes to my mid-70s, I'm here for it. But, you know, maybe now we're laying down the foundations, or we're getting people used to workflow, or on the information architecture side, you know, one of my mantras is, you know, you start collecting data today, and in a year's time, you have a year's data. So, you know, ultimately, we all want to see that change happen. And I think we all want to sit with an associate in 6 years' time and their life isn't what we often hear. And, you know, you're talking especially the last few years about, you know, modern workplaces, mental health, work-life balance, you know, dependencies and all this kind of stuff. We don't want that to be the case. So we'd love to all sit here and go, that change. And for many of us, that isn't us writing smarter software or anything like that. That's use some of the software you already have, use the platforms that you have, add to them. But ultimately, it's about the whole of the change, digital change, people change, business change, culture change, all happening and people sticking with it. Because, you know, the other frustration, I guess, as you get a bit older is watching things that you are really invested in. I hope they really, really succeed, not come to fruition. And then no one talks about that. And, you know, again, if you kind of, you talked about agile at the beginning and, you know, all of that stuff's supposed to be about learning lessons and dissecting the lessons and then moving forward with those and going, why would we not do that again? And so, you know, we all are in for the change, but, you know, maybe some of the people who've been around a bit longer also have the experience on what didn't work and the secrets behind why. Because people strangely don't put press releases out about failures or closing things down.
No, but I think that's 100% right. I think that whole change, I think sort of, and it brings me onto one of the things that sort of makes me laugh, because every now and again I see a sort of a semi-snarky post on LinkedIn by you, and it's, here's my presentation in 2017. And I could present it tomorrow and it would still be the same, or quite words to that effect. And I think that there is, we do seem to be in that kind of that bubble. And I don't think of it as a new phase or a new thing. I think we're still in the really early stages of organizational and in industry change. We're calling it something slightly different and we're doing something, but actually it's still digital. It's the old sort of mantra of quite the big four, and I mean, it's digital transformation.
Yeah.
People are, we're still in the early stages of that. And I think that that is going to kind of be around for ages. It's just at the moment we're calling it generative AI and it's the new thing. And it is going to have an impact and it is going to have a positive impact. And I think that's fine. I think it's those people that and companies that are out there, they're driving this sort of mantra and thing, almost forgetting about the organizational change, almost forgetting about the things that need to happen to make it stick, to make it not just be a flash in the pan. I think we could chat for about another 17 years. Interestingly, I've got Alex booked on to the podcast in a couple of weeks' time. So I'm going to have a chat to him about what he's been doing and hopefully not that he's going to be there until he's 70. But yeah, it's fine. I think just to wrap up, Alex, I thought it'd be good, and I know we're coming up to time anyway, but it thought it'd be good just to, why don't you tell me in, I don't know, 3.5 minutes, no, a bit longer, your current like product view, what's happening, bit of a plug more than anything else, don't normally do it, but when I heard about it, I thought it was really interesting and sort of, I think the audience would be really keen to understand a bit more and what's coming over the next sort of 12, 18 months.
Okay, so yeah, I think two kind of main areas that you'll see from us coming through. One is around kind of this knowledge side. So we're now in market with Insight Plus. Insight Plus, the first part of that, to your point about, you know, iterations, was around curated best practice, knowledge, know-how, etc., and building that entirely into our platform. So that has the workflow, it has more metadata than I managed to support it before to support things like, you know, taxonomies and IA stuff, but basically taking the pain out of curating things and then allowing people to build the knowledge bases, because ultimately it's about content and finding that content. That will evolve out as we're just currently doing integration with Data Warehouse so that we can integrate, you know, information onto deals, onto matters, onto people, and allow a highly contextual search. And the third part is we've been building out kind of semantic search to try and build out like a hybrid search experience so that lawyers have their choice of, what do I want to do today? I want a very, very precise search. No, I want to go and ask something. I have no idea what's going on here. So we're kind of starting to build out a kind of what we call an ask feature, which is basically kind of a vector embedded search and trying to work out how to use that. You know, part of it could be generative. We've done a generative view where you can kind of get a starting point by asking a natural language question, but equally under the bonnet of that, you know, there's tons of stuff we could do to make search better, leveraging that area. But all of it needs testing. All of it needs to be understood. I think a lot of people are just throwing, you know, vectors at something and hoping the results are right. But ultimately, you know, the retrieval in RAG is probably the R is the most important part. And then, of course, it ties back into information architecture.
Yeah,
I think that will evolve over the next year or so. It's exciting times. You know, the customers we're working with are exciting that all of the stuff we're talking about is coming out as part of that. The other side we're working on is kind of iManage AI, which is a combination of stuff we've been working on for many years, like enrichment of content so that you could potentially run, you know, the entire DMS and you basically get doc types and key data points out of doc types, which all help search knowledge, practice, etc. But on the other side of that, we do been working and doing that R&D. I said with the data science team and another team, we're building out something called Ask iManage, and Ask iManage is very much kind of the generative side and what could you do with the generative side and the use cases. We see that almost, you know, the transformation for us in some ways is that that's a practice tool.
Yeah.
So we then have to get into the practice. Like every practice area is going to use that differently for different reasons, for different purposes, etc., etc. So the other bit, which I've been talking about as, you know, as our Sky Manager is going out kind of into testing at the moment, we have kind of EAP programs, et cetera, with some really fascinating customers who are doing some great work with us around that. And we've got people doing that kind of, you know, customer discovery, validation, coming back, changing, moving fast, all that kind of stuff. But the other side what I've started talking about is kind of like, because this is starting to become visible, it's like, what do you do with that? You know, is that now a permanent piece of metadata against a document, or is it transitory, as in it's part of a workflow? So, you know, again, working with either partners like yourselves, or, you know, we work with, you know, we kind of have integrations with things like Power Automate for the people who use Power Automate. you know, for me, the exciting part is going, well, you've done that. Now, what do you do with it? What do you turn it into? Does it turn into another document and another output? Does it turn into a database where you then reanalyze that and put it somewhere else? And to me, that's kind of, you know, there's a load of exciting things both with our partner network and with our, you know, Microsoft partner, in terms of what you could then do with that, either back into knowledge and into the DM and, you know, the object of record in the DM, where we're putting in more metadata to support that, support the likes of you to be able to write stuff back against objects of record from your workflows. But equally, what do you want to do with some of that data next? You know, where does it go after you've analyzed six leases? Do you want to use a workflow to push that to something else for a human to review it, to then turn it into a report that then goes to the client, that then goes into the client system or whatever it may be? And,
yeah,
you know, I'm just getting very geeky about the workflow stuff because, we have it behind the curation. We now, you know, we have it wider in the platform. We have partners like you who can hook into those hooks and triggers and actions and write back, et cetera. And that to me is getting back to, you know, that I'm working on what I work on, but ultimately it's, you know, going back to organization. I work for a global product team. I've got someone who does workflow. They don't report to me. They report into another department. Mm-hmm. She's amazing. And she is building out all these capabilities that will allow us to start to build these end-to-end capabilities and also open those up to our partners. And so, you know, build the creativity on the platform and ultimately I'll be one front-end interface for that, and someone like you will be another interface on top of the document management system and all the goodness in there and the new capabilities in there that allow you to go off and be specialist in what you do.
Yeah, and I think that sounds really exciting because I think that's the key thing. You talk about partners from an iManage perspective. We can't be an island. We can't sit there and just sort of go, yeah, we're Altalogix. We're just doing what we do. We have to connect into other systems. We have to connect into the PMS, into the DMS, understand where things go, into your experience database, the data lake, whatever it might be. Yeah. Because we sit there waiting for triggers to come in from different systems or from actions within our system to then drive other actions further down the line. And I think you talked earlier about the whole refactoring of sort of startups and software and everything else, and everyone's always refactoring. Everyone's always sort of reducing technical debt. And I think that along 5-6 years ago, we talk when I was at HiQ, we talk about integrations and go, we can integrate with all of these things if you do it in this way with that. And now we're an API first platform. If we can do it in our system, then you can do it to our system from somewhere else because we're API first. And you sort of you sit there and you start to then quite experience the barriers to that in terms of the industry. But things are changing, and I think that's the opportunity. There's plenty there, but I think it's really exciting. I mean, everyone comes back to knowledge. I think I did a presentation for Lex Mundi in 2015, 2014, talking about the rise of KM again from the librarian side of research kind of world, which was sort of not back then, it was what it was known, but actually its evolution now into innovation structure. But KM is fundamental to organizations like law firms, accountancy firms, your customers, our customers, insurance. And the knowledge part of what you do is fundamental. And as you said earlier, as soon as you start hitting the bottom line and start fixing problems that fix the bottom line or increasing the bottom line, then knowledge is just going to get sort of front and center, even more so than
I agree. I think, you know, what we've seen around the generative AI is it comes back to either it can help clean up data really, really well, which is back to knowledge and information architecture and business data, or it relies on having good information and it relies on grounding it in good information, which is collections, know-how, templates, how we run our projects, etc. And people are realizing the ones that did this have those assets, and the ones that don't, and they're needing to collect them right now. I think the other thing, Ben, is like, we talk in SaaS about scale all the time. You know, that's large chunk of what I do is scale. How do we scale this? How do we scale this too? how do we make it so simple that, how do we look at the cost, etc. To me, knowledge, the knowledge teams, and how I think knowledge will evolve, or whether that'll be teams or people, is about scale. You can innovate. You can innovate a great thing. You can do one document automation and prove a point as an innovation person. But ultimately, knowledge is the kind of the bench strength, I guess, of how you scale those, where you then want these processes to be rolled out against every practice group. You want automation to happen against every team. You want to run things through project plans. You want to, you know, make things more consistent. Whatever the drivers are in your org, because they're all going to be different. Yeah. To me, the knowledge and knowledge management is how you scale that.
Yeah, 100%. And that is a very, very, very good way to end our conversation. Alex Smith, it's been an absolute pleasure to start my Monday morning with you. Maybe we should do it every week because it's quite nice. just
answer your stand-ups.
Yeah, exactly. But seriously, thank you very much for your time, and have a great week. Take it easy. I will see you, no doubt, legal gear,
very soon.
Others at some point. Keep well, mate. See you soon. Thank
Cheers,
you.
Bye. Bye-bye.